Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, November 5th, 2013. It's just after 3 UTC. You guys may have noticed in the last few weeks we've been doing this just after 2 UTC. Why have we moved it back an hour? Daylight savings time.
That's fucking bullshit.
Because everybody goes through this mental thing where just everybody collectively through some sort of mass hysteria agrees to do everything an hour later than they used to. You turn the clocks back. But what is really happening? You're doing everything an hour later. Now, Hold on one second.
Not everybody. My son didn't give a shit about this daylight savings time bullshit.
Of course not. He woke up. 1.5-ish now?
What's that?
1.5 or so now?
Well, three months.
Okay, one and a third.
One and a quarter. On the dot. Okay, yeah, all right. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't give a shit about this. He woke up when he normally wakes up.
Of course.
He'll wake up an hour later, earlier, whatever the fuck. I woke up. So it's kind of funny because, you know, I had forgotten about the whole thing, even though I got a bazillion reminders. And it's like if I looked at my phone when I finally realized it is that I turned on my DirecTV and I hit the info button and I see, oh, what the fuck? It's earlier. I'm like, you know, that's like, oh, right. Of course. You know, this whole thing. But, you know, we got up at 6:30, which is normally 7:30, and we spent the whole day basically operating like nothing changed. And today, you know, it was such a mess because, you know, I was working until relatively late and was dark all of a sudden, you know, at 6 o'clock. And I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell is dark? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. We did this stupid thing.
Well, you know, I will say a couple things. I mean, we have this rant twice a year, of course, but of course it is somewhat easier in the fall. I mean, you're screwed because you have a young kid, but like everybody else gets to like sleep an extra hour or do some. I actually did some stuff during the extra hour. I didn't sleep, but then it is the other side around. But the bottom line is this whole time changing stuff is bullshit.
It's just confusing as all shit. I mean, Jesus, you know, it's like today, me getting at 6 o'clock and it was light yesterday, today it's dark. I mean, pitch black.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, although I will, I mentioned this on Twitter. I would like to have the extra hour every day. I could deal with that. I could deal with a 25-hour day. I don't care.
The thing with time, I give you 24, you want 25. I give you 25, you want 26. I give you 26, you're going to want 30.
There's a certain point at which like that stops being like, if I have a feeling that if you put me in a room where I could not see the outside or have any indication of time whatsoever. And they've of course done this experiment on various people, but I have a feeling if you did this to me specifically, my daily cycle would be about 27 hours long.
You think really
26, 27 hours long?
No, I'd be on the 24 hour cycle.
Cause here's the thing. Like I always feel like, I don't know. Based on the times I get tired and how long I want to sleep, et cetera, like, you know, I think 27 hours would be perfect for me.
Well, I'm sure they've done some of the stuff analysis. You know, we've had all these people in orbit and on the space station, right? Which that complete, obviously, you know, forget about 24 fucking hours. I mean, they're spinning around all the time. Light, dark, light, dark.
90 minutes approximately is the cycle on the space station.
Right, every 90 minutes, you're seeing light, dark, light, dark. So, I mean, whatever the hell you create is artificial, right? So how do they cope there?
Well, there are a couple things they do. First of all, it apparently, those kinds of things do screw with people's internal clocks.
Oh, it's gotta be.
Because your internal clock apparently, you know, regardless of what I say about if you put me in a room with nothing, where, you know, all kinds of weird effects happen because we're not evolved to be in a room with nothing. Actually, the bright lights reset your clock, your internal clock. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why they tell you, like, you know, don't go to sleep watching TV or with a computer or an iPad or whatever, because the light of the screen fools your body into thinking it's daytime.
Mm-hmm.
But they pick a time zone on the ground. I believe in the space station, it's actually Moscow time that they operate under.
Okay.
And they pick a time zone on the ground and they do their daily cycle as if they were on that time zone.
Okay.
And
well, I will tell you that.
But the light and dark, like, would screw you up a little bit.
Well, I will tell you that last night I really fucked myself. Okay, with a light. Because what happened is that, I don't know, at some hour, I decided I needed to go to the bathroom. So I decided to go to the bathroom. And I actually have dimmable lights in my bathroom.
Uh-huh.
So I actually have them set to the ultimate dim setting in order for me to go to the bathroom.
And you accidentally, like, blasted yourself.
No. That wasn't the problem. Okay. No, not at all. I went to the bathroom, no problem.
I'm glad that you report that you successfully achieved that. You're at the same level as my son.
Yeah. I managed to do that. Then I walked back to my bed, you know, and I sat down and I was thirsty, so I wanted to get a glass of water. Okay, all right. And I was, like, very groggy, and so I went and I freaking tipped over the glass of water. I just flung the water all over the place. Okay? I mean, it was just retarded. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, at that point, I said, fuck, I gotta turn on the light. I gotta clean this mess up. So I had to go and, like, do this. Okay? And, you know, and as I proceeded to clean this mess and I had to turn on the damn lights in the room, oh, God, to get back to sleep. What a mess.
Yeah, because your body at that point is like, it's daytime!
I turned on all the damn lights, and I, you know, yeah, I, Jesus Christ, I just, you know, I was just like...
So God, you guys listening might, and normally, right about this time in the show, we'd say, but we've got some real topics for you today.
And we don't!
We don't.
We really don't. We sat here, okay, apparently both of us, Sam on the West Coast, me here on the East Coast, okay, I sat down and I started looking at all the stuff that happened this week. I mean, really nothing was appealing. I mean, nothing. I'm sitting here looking at topic after topic, and I'm just looking at all the stuff, and I'm like, who cares? Eh, whatever. And it's not that they don't care. The thing is that a lot of the stuff we talked about recently multiple times, and nothing really happened in the last week. Or if it happened, I mean, were we really excited?
Minor further developments on things that don't change the fundamentals of what we've talked about several times already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, it's like, yeah,
so we've got spying stuff, we got Snowden stuff, we got Obamacare stuff, we've got whatever. Now,
I could say stuff, but I already said this last week. I talked about how I looked at the numbers for my sign up for the health plan, and to me, it's a much better deal than the health insurance I had this year.
So I do have a couple things that are sort of evergreen.
Okay,
like that. You know, I've talked about a couple of these at various times, but I don't think I've recently talked about them with you. So
okay.
Let me propose two things, and then we'll take a break. And if you want to talk about one of them, you'll talk about them. Otherwise, we'll, like, yammer for a couple more minutes and then say goodbye.
Yeah,
so
that
we got the climate change stuff, and one article I saw this week that was actually pretty interesting that was from the Freakonomics blog that. You talked about basically how even though the science is actually pretty settled, despite what any deniers may tell you, the science is pretty...
Scientists are all pretty much in agreement.
But the economists aren't. And in general, the question of, okay, let's assume this is happening. Should we do anything? If we do anything, what should we do? That is a very open question. I thought that might be interesting to talk about a few minutes. And also, one I talked with my daughter a while back, and I've ranted a couple times, but just in general, I've seen a flurry of advice articles out there lately about restricting your kids' access, especially young kids, access to things like iPads and iPhones and stuff like that, and I wanted to get your take on those things.
Well, but it's not a new stuff. It's been around. Well, we haven't talked.
Well, right, exactly. That's my point.
All right, sure, we can talk about that. What the hell?
So let's take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about those two things after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
All right.
Okay, we're back.
We're back.
Oh, and I should mention another one of those little things that there's nothing much to say about, but, like, I guess you travel more than I do, but they're doing the thing where they're letting the devices on planes.
They finally went and, like, you know, accepted basically what everybody who had a brain knew. I mean, I can go back all the way back to when I was learning to pilot myself. I mean, the bottom line was that, hell, I kept my cell phone on when I was flying. It affects shit. And, and we go back, CD players, any of this stuff. The effects were... A couple of times that some of the stuff happened, it was some anecdotal evidence about some interference with some early electronic devices, sometimes in the 90s. That probably was true because there were some devices that had emitted quite a lot of more RF interference. But the reality is that with most current new devices, I mean, that's just not been the case. And you know what the reality is? There were tons of people on the planes that left them on anyway.
Really? I can't believe that, Yvonne. Are there people who don't follow the instructions?
That's right. That's the dirty little secret.
I can't believe that's true. I can't believe that.
Anyway. So, the reality is that,
didn't we have planes falling out of the sky every week?
Nope. We didn't.
Are you sure?
And here's the worst thing. Now, you know, so we started even giving, like, for example, pilots... Well, let's face it, you want to know the stupidity, start giving pilots iPads, right? Okay, because they've been replacing, like, almost every airline has been replacing, specifically with an iPad, not some other type, but iPads. They've been replacing their flight manuals in these big bags that if you ever saw a pilot go into a plane, they carried these big flight bags that had the manuals for the aircraft, checklists, procedures, all these different things that they needed for them to travel with, carried up. A very massive bag, and they start replacing them with fucking iPads. And guess what? No planes crashed because the pilots were using an iPad in order to do this shit.
But, you know, so, Yvonne, those had to have been, like, specially hardened iPads or something, right?
No.
So
basically, the FAA finally decided, well, you know what? You can leave them on all the time. I mean, the reality is that, you know, they talked about... they'd excluded talking on the phones.
Is still prohibited, right?
No, you can, you know, because you can use Bluetooth and you can use Wi-Fi. The reality about the phone restriction has more to do with practical concerns regarding actually communicating with a cell tower. Because, by the way, I've looked at my phone. If I've left it on and I'm at 30,000 feet, by the way, you get no signal. Okay. At 30,000 feet, you get a signal at lower altitudes, but not at high altitudes. At that altitude, if you want to actually be able to talk on a cell phone, the plan probably has to be equipped with equipment to be able to transmit and receive the signal. It just I've never been able to see at a cruising altitude that I get a signal. Okay, all right, to actually use the phone. Okay, only at much lower altitudes.
I can't believe you've tried this, Yvonne.
Oh yeah, I know. So that's the one thing about that. I mean, it's just and anyway, I will admit that I think that it would be quite annoying. I mean, I know myself, very loud guy. Don't talk on the phone on a plane. I mean, no, I mean, don't. Just don't. Don't. It's a bad idea. It's a bad idea. I mean, it's just a horrible idea. Uh-huh. Okay. It's just. I can't imagine the freaking cacophony of people freaking like yakking the freaking.
Instead, just when you read your book or magazine, be sure to read out loud.
Right. Right. Of course. Right.
Anyway. You want to do climate change first?
Well, let's go into the climate change.
Okay, so I want to point out this stupid little article, which of course I had it in front of me like 10 seconds ago.
And of course you
of course
browsed away from it.
There it is. This is an article by Steve Sexton on freakonomics.com. The title of the article is "The Science May Be Settled, But the Economics Isn't." I recommend it to a lot of you guys out there. It's just an interesting take. So first of all, on the science stuff, I just want to say, you know, because there may be listeners out here who do, you know, say, this is bullshit, this isn't happening, it's not human caused, it's, or maybe there are natural cycles involved or blah, blah, blah. First of all, I want to say, when you're thinking about what to do about things, and when you're thinking about, you have to go by the best information available to you at the time. So let's say, okay, right now, of climate scientists, 99% or so agree that global warming is happening and that it is caused by...
That's correct. Climate change is happening because it's not all over the place.
You're right. I apologize. Climate change is happening, which includes an overall average temperature warming for the globe, which is very different than warming in any specific spot.
Because not all the places are getting warmer.
Right.
Okay, all right. Some places are getting colder, but on average, the temperature is warmer.
Right. And then there's a general agreement that a primary cause is human emissions into the atmosphere since the Industrial Revolution. Okay.
Right.
Which have been accelerating, of course. Now, is there that 1% that disagrees or isn't so sure about this? And certainly aren't there all kinds of people in other fields who don't know the details, who are like meteorologists are famous for jumping into this debate when they don't really know what they're talking about on a large scale. But certainly there are other people. But let's grant, for instance, that there's a chance that 1% is right, that further information will come to light over the next 10, 15, 20 years that says, oh, you know what? It was a 30-year cycle, and there's nothing to worry about, and the emissions weren't really a cause after all. Let's say let's even grant that possibility. I think it's a remote possibility, but let's grant that possibility.
We still have to
operate now under the best information we have now. Right. You know, if you're in a situation where there's, you know, a 99% chance that the situation is this and a 1% chance that the situation is that, you're not doing a smart thing if you make decisions based on the assumption that the 1% is what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, so having said all that, and that it's settled. So what is settled is that there are effects and you know, and these are long-term effects. So like a lot of people talk about, okay, well, there's been a pause for the last 15 years or whatever. And, you know, even even climate scientists are starting to say, okay, yeah, over the last 15 years, there was a little bit of a pause. But if you look at the history, there have been pauses like this many times before in the cycle. That's when you have all kinds of different cycles interacting with each other at different times, at different scales. Sometimes you go up, sometimes you go down. And if you cherry pick the data over the last 100, 150 years, you can find lots of flat parts. But if you look at the overall trend over the whole time period, guess what? Going up. And so there's a lot of that. When you have very, very noisy data, it's very easy to say, well, this year it went down. Well, okay, fine. This year it went down over last year, but you got to look at the long-term trends. I mean, one of the things I look at whenever I hear people posting about these kinds of things is, are they looking at something that's on the order of less than 10 years? And if they are, then I don't even look at it, you know, because there's too much noise in the system. You know, there are lots and lots of systems where you just got incredible noise and you have to average that stuff out. I mean, just as an example from the stuff I was, you know, when I do the stupid election stuff, you can't look at one poll. Anytime you ever hear somebody talking about one poll, you know, they're either stupid or saying it for an agenda of some sort, because one poll alone, it does not give you an idea of what's happening. You have to look at, you have to average out, you have to look at trends, you have to look at whatever. Anyway, so let's assume at this point, for the sake of argument, climate change is happening. The globe is getting warmer. Ice caps are melting a little bit. There are areas that are getting more precipitation. There are areas that are getting less. There are changes happening. And let's even grant for the moment that on net, this will be impose pressures on the human population, let's say, and the rest of the animals and plants and stuff too. So what do you do? Or do you do anything? So there are a lot of folks saying, hey, we have to take all kinds of really strong actions. We have to cut down on carbon. We have to put all kinds of regulations in place. We have to put in carbon taxes. We have to do very significant actions right now to prevent stuff from happening in the future. And by very significant, I'm talking very significant. I mean, it's been estimated that in order to sort of be in a healthy place, emissions have to return to levels we haven't seen in like 100 years. You know, and that's like a huge, huge cut. But people point out, and what this article goes into is what you have to think about here is humans tend to very highly discount things to the future. And a lot of the predictions about the negative consequences for climate change are many decades down the road. In some cases, hundreds of years down the road. And so it's very hard for people to say, okay, we're going to take a huge hit now economically in order to do something that might make it better in 100 years.
And I got to tell you that here's the thing.
Yeah.
We kept talking. I think you and I have talked about this a little bit because, look, the science is not deniable. Okay. All right. What the implications have are, and even like some of the economists argue, is like, why do something about some of the things? Why do something radical? Is because, you know, the planet has changed as we have lived for an extensive period of time. Let's face it. I mean, there are people, the Dutch live below sea level, okay?
Right.
They have for a long time, okay? There are many, New Orleans was built below sea level. What the heck? A place in Italy that I was thinking that keeps having problems.
Venice,
Venice, for example. It's been around for a long time. Man has gone and we have undergone changes to which, to a certain extent, we have made certain adjustments. Okay, all right, to deal with. Even like right now. Okay, the reality is that if you look at the United States, which is still, I mean, about to be, I can't remember, China surpassed CO2 emissions in the United States already, but, you know, it's like number one or number two in the world. Fossil fuel consumption is going down. Average fuel economy is up. Average energy usage by per capita is going down. Okay. It is happening to a certain extent. It's not happening on a dime, but it's happening. And I'm just, I don't argue the science. I mean, the questions are whether anything to do, what is there to do? I mean, because I'm just, let's face it. I mean, do we just adapt to the change? And it is what it is.
Well, see, there are a couple things that I think along those lines. And I think that, first of all, I think that's a plausible answer. Now, one of the things is that's a question here is, are we talking about gradual change that we can adapt to? Or is there a significant chance of reaching some sort of tipping point that actually just goes out of control and makes the planet uninhabitable? Because obviously it changes the dynamics a little bit. If you're talking about, you know, hey, parts of Florida go underwater, you know, because I saw a map the other day that said, you know, if all the ice caps melted, what would the coastlines look like? And of course, most of Florida is gone. You know, and I'm like, you know, we can live without Florida. You know,
but like I said before,
I was teasing there, like, because one of the things, of course, is if this happens over the course of 50, 100, 150, 200 years, let's say the coastlines do change. Either you have technological stuff like you mentioned in the Netherlands, where we do some sort of technological thing to hold back the water, or, you know, you got 200 years, people move.
We move. Like what is happening right now, for example, to give you an example, Hurricane Sandy blasted through New York. Do you know what's happening in a lot of places that have been deemed like, you know, that will flood again just like that the next time?
Tell us, Yvonne.
Everybody's moving out. Yeah. They're leaving. They're becoming uninhabited. People are moving out. Period. They're not going to live there anymore.
And there's been a lot of talk about this as well in terms of, you know, okay, so large areas that used to be good farmland might not be anymore. But guess what? Other areas that didn't used to be good farmland might start to be good farmland.
It'd be going to become great farmland.
You know, I remember Putin once joking about global warming, bring it on, you know, because he's like, I could use a less severe winter in Moscow. That would be cool with me, you know. You know, and so there's a lot that human adaptation can deal with. Now, again, it changes the dynamics entirely if you're talking about reaching some sort of tipping point. But so far, I haven't seen evidence that we're in a runaway situation that we're, you know, that Earth is going to turn into Venus or something and be completely uninhabitable.
Right.
It's more.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. Okay. The reality is, you know what? Like, I'm going to tell you something. One of the biggest drivers of carbon emissions has been automobiles, right?
Yep.
I'm going to tell you something. The automobile is on the cusp that in 20 years, the way that we move around is going to be so incredibly changed that this may become a completely moot point. That is the reality. I am looking at a situation that I'm thinking that, you know, me that I'm like, that Sam knows I love driving, but I got to tell you something. If I'm going to take my child probably just 20 years from now to go driving, it's going to be because it's at some circuit where people do it just for fun. It's not going to be for transportation. And you know what? Those cars are going to be powered by something totally different than what we're using like right now.
And this is because of self-driving cars, better public transportation infrastructure.
Yes. Because
electric cars instead of gas. And the thing is, part of the, when people say we have to do something, part of what they're doing is suggesting legislating, making those kinds of changes faster. And my thought on this is, look, here's the reality that I think we have to face. Doing that kind of social engineering, saying, you know, hey, you have to buy an electric car or whatever, tends to not go over very well politically. And it tends to be incredibly gradual.
But you know what does work? Economics. Okay? And cool factors. Two things drive that.
Now,
so
I mean, there are counterexamples, of course, like, you know, the seat belts and airbags and all those kinds of stuff were legislated. They didn't just come naturally.
Yeah, no, agreed. Okay, but that was very slow. What I'm talking about is that the other day, a survey came out of the top 25 most affluent neighborhoods in the United zip codes in the United States, and what the number one selling car was. Do you know what the number one selling car was?
Prius.
Which I was shocked. No, it was the Tesla Model S.
Oh, in those neighborhoods, right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It was the fully electric Tesla Model S. Not even the hybrid Prius.
Right, right.
The Tesla. Okay?
Because it's a status thing.
It's a status thing, but it's a practical status thing.
So
is my point.
So here's my thing. Like, one of the things I think that people have to start dealing with, like, I don't think, like, you know, the politics every once in a while gets it to a point where some minor adjustments are made. Okay, we're gonna make fuel efficiency standards over the next 30 years will increase 10% or something minor like that.
Well, let me tell you, they've increased even more than that over the last 5 years. Let me tell you the one thing that's still shocking about fuel efficiency standards. Okay, if you're looking at today, a sedan, a luxury German sedan, large four-door sedan, 10 years ago, average MPG, highway MPG, 22 miles per gallon. You grab right now any from Audi, BMW, Mercedes, their leading offer, large sedan. I'm not talking a car that compromised on luxury or whatever. Highway MPG, 34 miles per gallon. I'm looking at the numbers and I'm looking at them like,
right. So,
well, how did this,
And it could be argued that a lot of these changes are driven by some of the regulations to improve things, but my argument is even those things are tiny in comparison to the level of changes that you would have to make to really make a difference.
They're economics. You know what? The price of gas, the price of oil 10 years ago, a barrel of oil is $40. It's consistently stayed over $100 since I don't know when.
Well, and this is why part of the argument that people who are arguing for radical change would be you tax the hell out of that to raise that price to $200. And you change the economics even further.
And that actually, I don't totally disagree with that, to be honest with you, because that has proven to the same thing happened with cigarettes. You look at cigarette consumption in the U.S. versus the taxes that have been levied on cigarettes. Dude, people smoke less. They can't afford to anymore. Okay, it's too damn expensive. You know. I mean, I do think the taxes, if you put taxes on certain things, it does drive certain behavior in a certain direction. I do believe that. But I think that more than that, economic changes that make certain things more attractive in a certain way.
Later, Alex.
Okay.
Make the change happen much faster than anything else.
Drink it up here instead.
You want me to drink the drink upstairs?
Yeah.
You made a new drink?
Yeah.
I'll drink it after I'm done talking to Yvonne.
Or me can talk to Yvonne.
You're going to talk to Yvonne?
Oh, we're talking.
You're going to do all the talking?
Yeah, and do you get or drink?
Oh.
Well, that's really good.
Okay, yeah, you two talk for just a second. I'll be right back.
Okay.
And you do it all with talking.
Alex, what are you doing?
Yeah,
hello?
To you.
I don't hear you anymore. What are you doing?
Need to spray chains downstairs.
Okay, now I did hear you very well.
And I was at school.
Oh, that's good.
And you have a choo-choo train and flies.
You have a choo-choo train with flags?
No, flies.
Flies?
Yeah. He flies by himself.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Play with it with my hands.
Oh, wow. Well, that sounds cool.
And we have more trains that are even littler than that. That train is big.
It is? Okay. Well, I have a train over here. It was a gift of my wife's grandfather. You know, when my son gets older, can you come over here and help us build it?
Have work to do. Sorry.
Okay, all right.
Okay, I'm back. I have the drink.
Hello, Daddy.
Okay, I'm going to talk to Yvonne again now. Did you have a good conversation?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Go back down to get that, then grab it, drop it off downstairs really quick.
No, you can take it.
No, you take it.
Mommy will get you your drink, too.
You do it.
No.
Don't worry, you do it. You do it.
I'll take you down.
No, that's down.
You want to take this downstairs?
No, you do it. That is your job.
But you're going to come down too, right?
No. I'm going to talk.
You're going to talk to Yvonne? Okay, yeah. I'll take this down. When I get back, though, it'll be my turn to talk to Yvonne again, okay?
Okay. We have trains here, and I'm at home now. And we have train tracks downstairs with trains that fit on it and sometimes don't. We got two widow trains that don't fit on my track. We have two widow trains that fit on my track.
Two little trains, they fit on your track? They do?
No, they didn't.
No, they
only
didn't.
Those Widow, Booster, and Coco ones.
Oh, I see.
Okay, Alex.
As more trains, it does fit on my railroad.
Okay. I gotcha.
Okay, guy, my turn. Mommy's waiting for you downstairs.
I'm done talking.
Okay. You say goodbye to Yvonne?
Bye.
It's going to go away.
Well, I'm still going to talk to him.
Say bye, too.
Well, I'm not done yet.
Say bye now.
No, I'm not done yet.
Yes, you are.
Look. Mommy's coming for you. I hear Mommy. I thought I heard Mommy. Oh, here she comes.
Alex, I have your juice.
Oh, there you go.
We're going to take a bath now since you're up here.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, I'm back.
Your son is quite bossy.
He's a little bossy?
Oh, just a tad. Now, here's the one thing about that, though, that I was going to mention, is aside from that, is the fact that I asked him to, I said, he was talking about his trains. So I told him that, you know, I actually, my wife's relatives actually, my wife's grandfather, one of his grandparents, we have a train set that they give us as a gift, and that at some point we would have to assemble it, and I asked him if he could come over and like help us with it. He told me, "No, I'm too busy." And I was like, "Okay,
there you go."
He apparently is quite busy.
Speaking of which, for the last few weeks, I was supposed to ask you if you got the train we sent you.
A wooden one?
I don't remember what it
was. For his birthday or something. Yes. Okay. Damn it. There was no note with it.
My wife was like, my wife was like, I think there might not have been a note.
Oh, so that yes, was from us. We did. Damn it. That was from you. We were dying to try to figure out who the hell is going to ask us if we got it. Okay. All right. We didn't know who sent it.
That was us.
Yes. Okay. Well, yes, we did. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, yeah, he really likes it very much. Okay, so yeah, we were like, who sent this thing? There's no note.
Oops. Anyway, getting back to the point of global warming, I just wanted to say one thing that I thought was like the one of the estimates the scientists have made. They estimate how much fossil fuel is left in the earth for us to dig up and burn, and they figure in order for the planet to stay within, they've sort of stated a limit that they say a tolerable amount of average temperature increases something like 2 degrees Celsius or 3 degrees. I forget what the number is. A small number of degrees Celsius. And they've calculated that in order to stay below that, we can't burn any more than a third of what's left in the ground, according to estimates of what the current reserves are. And there may be even more. Like, over the last couple of years, there have been occasional reports that they've found even more that they didn't know was there.
Right.
So the estimates were you can only burn about a third. And if we burn about more than about a third of what's in the ground, we're screwing ourselves. So my reaction to that is, okay then, because what's going to happen? We are going to burn every last ounce of what's in the ground. We may
not
slow
necessarily.
Down. We may slow
no,
down.
No, no, no. Not necessarily.
I think
not
we're,
necessarily,
I think
no,
we're gonna...
and that the only reason I say it is because it depends on what economically makes sense. Okay,
that is true, and I'm being somewhat facetious. It's of course an asymptotic thing where
right.
it gets more and more expensive to get further and further into
yes,
that reserve.
That's why.
So let me be less absolute about it. We are going to go over a third. We are going to take more than a third of what's left.
I gotta say, I think we will.
The economics will change, but I think the economics will change too slowly to keep us from going over that one third number. So
I think
when we're talking about public policy reactions, like in general, okay, yeah, it's good to encourage conservation. It's good to encourage energy efficiency. And there are a couple other factors I'll get into in just a second that I think are also very important, but I think we have to be spending a considerable amount of time thinking about, okay, let's assume that this does happen and we don't stop it. How do we mitigate the damage? How do we react in the smartest way possible that's as good as possible for human beings and the wildlife we care about? And we should be thinking about geoengineering too. And there are a lot of risks associated with geoengineering. For those not familiar with the term, that's basically technology specifically designed to change the climate. So to counteract, you know, and I've joked before on some of these shows, we know one way to do this. Carl Sagan was warning us about it in the 80s, and that's nuclear winter. You know,
right.
you set off a whole bunch of nukes, you're going to lower the temperature. So if the temperature gets too hot, just set off a bunch of nukes. Now, I'm being, you know, I'm just doing that for effect, but the reality is there are all kinds of potential technologies out there that can counteract any effect from the carbon.
Well, for example, we found out, I don't know, you know, we had several, like, volcanic eruptions
yep.
that have happened, like, over the years, and that those have had a substantial cooling effect on the planet.
Right.
For
and
example.
So, and so, of course, people have pointed out there are incredible risks associated with trying to do engineering on a planetary scale, because if you screw it up and move things
too
far...
Where the fuck do we go?
Yeah, well, yeah, if you screw it up, where the fuck do we go? But, like, let's say we're trying to compensate for the heating of the planet by cooling it, and we end up in a new ice age instead because we overcompensate.
Yeah,
oops.
Well, but here's the question I've got. I mean, the one thing is they keep talking about, well, you know, 2 or 3 degrees centigrade, we can't handle anymore. I hear this, right? Now, here's the thing, right? We've got people that live on this planet at every extreme of climate, okay? All right? We've got people that live in cold, unbearable temperatures year-round, and basically have 6 months of light, 6 months of dark.
Yep.
And we have people that live in a freaking desert, okay,
yep.
All right, and endure that all year-round. And the one thing that I'm having trouble... Well, the thing is, no, what I'm saying is that I hear, like, well, if 2 or 3 degrees go up, then it's impossible. And I'm like, really? We have people that live in ranges
over
60 degrees. Here's the one thing before I finish that. Listen, I am not saying that there's not going to be a whole bunch of impacts in different places regarding that. As we mentioned, migrations, changes, a whole bunch of other things. But when we're talking about 2 to 3 degrees centigrade, and I'm talking about people, I mean, that live in such a broad range of temperature, why is it that I know that the changes are big, okay? But what I'm not saying is whether the change is big or not. I know it impacts millions, if not perhaps billions of people. But I keep saying it's not like we're all going to die because of it.
So
am I wrong?
Well, here's why only a few degrees makes potentially catastrophic changes. It's not that human beings alone can't adapt. It's that it changes. There are all kinds of plants and animals we depend on that aren't as good at adapting. And also, if we shift, so there's sort of a core zone where, you know, you're right, humans are at all extremes of climate and temperature, but there's a certain set of moderate climate where humans have flourished the most at. And you're potentially reducing the area of the landmass of the planet that's in that climate, A. So, you know, you of course, you can make more people move there and it's denser, et cetera. But also you've got, you know, the farmland and the seasons that the plants need, and, you know, certain plants have evolved to expect a certain thing, certain animals the same way. Bees are very sensitive. We've been having bee die-outs, not necessarily climate change related. There's a fungus going around and some other stuff. But the key is a lot of these elements of the ecosystem are actually far more sensitive than humans, but humans rely on them. And so if you do something that changes so quickly that maybe the humans can adapt, because humans are very, very good at adapting, but some of the species that humans are dependent on don't successfully adapt and go extinct, then, you know, again, maybe we can adapt around that. And I think, you know, a lot of these things do underestimate the degree of human resilience. But, you know, there's a lot of other dynamic things. And I think one of the things that people are especially worried about is that a lot of this we just don't fully understand.
So I think that's the main thing.
So if
I
you
mean,
move things
you know,
too far
gotta,
out of the comfort
right,
zone,
right,
yeah, okay,
right.
Maybe things will change slowly and we can adapt. Or maybe we'll suddenly get something, a catastrophic failure that happens too quickly for us to adapt to.
And by the way, I'm playing devil's advocate on this. I mean, I am for doing stuff in order to try to, like, reduce the impact that we're having on global warming. I am. So, but I got to tell you that there's a couple of trends. For example, we've got a whole bunch of places with very low fertility rates, and fertility rates are going down across the planet.
I was going to mention that as well, because, like, one of the key elements here is population growth. Because the more population you have, the more people you have using energy. And I don't want to get all Malthusian about this, but I think it's a key driver here.
That's absolutely right.
Obviously, we've increasing our technologies that use energy more and more aggressively. But also, we've got huge population growth. But as you mentioned, population growth is slowing. The predictions have the planet maxing out at around 9 billion in the next 50 years or so, and then starting to decline again. And I think one of the rapidest ways to address some of these problems is encourage an even faster reduction in birth rate.
Okay, so basically, dude, we got a planet. We got a paper to planet with condoms, baby. Dude, here's the solution to this problem. Screw it, condoms. A lot of them. We're gonna be handing out condoms with every Coca-Cola that's bought. Well, actually, Coke sales are going down, so we got to start with something else that becomes popular, because sort of seeing that Coca-Cola sales are declining quite substantially.
Uh huh. Yeah. Anyway, so
now you don't like my plan? Massive condom sales.
Actually, that's probably. You're put it in a flip way, but that's probably a significant part of any population control measure, because you don't want to do, you know, you don't want to do the China one child policy, which was incredibly draconian. But at the same time, you want to take, you know, people have studied this, and, you know, what's the key factor? Yes, availability to birth control is a big part of it, but even when you allow condoms, the biggest part in the biggest part of the world is empowering women to make decisions about their own lives.
Agreed.
And their bodies, and when they
yep.
become pregnant and when
yep.
they don't,
yep.
and giving them the cultural wherewithal to be able to say no.
Right.
you know, and that's made the hugest difference, is educating and empowering women to have control over their own destiny. One of the things that tends to result from that is women having more children and later in their lives. Which is helpful for these kinds of things. Because frankly, I look at these things and say, you know, so many human problems would actually be better if the world population was a third of what it is today. Now, yeah. That is not to say I'm not advocating in any way a lottery where we kill 2/3 of the humans on the planet. No.
You were advocating thermonuclear war before. You could probably annihilate a good
I was gonna nuke Antarctica, so we don't actually have to, you know.
Oh, so you don't have to do that?
We don't have to kill people with the nukes. We can nuke the Pacific Ocean, or we can nuke Antarctica. There are all kinds of places we can do this that'll get the ash up into the clouds and cause the nuclear winter without actually killing people.
I like this plan out of you. I thought you were, so basically we launch a massive nuke strike on Antarctica.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, of course, then you get to the whole problem of melting Antarctica and all the problems that would have. So maybe Antarctica's not the best place. But you know.
So the middle of the Pacific.
Middle of the Pacific.
Interesting. Well,
it also.
Well, that's a concept.
Oh, so anyway, I don't know. I get aggravated on the global warming thing because I see people arguing about these little changes that aren't enough to make a difference. And I'm like, okay, let's get past that because none of those things are going to happen. They're not politically feasible. So let's plan on what we do once the change has happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we are going to have to adapt to a certain number of changes. That's going to be inevitable. I do think that there is a lot of public policy that has made substantial change to the trends of where what we are producing is going. I think, look, one of the key producers that has been driving the numbers has been China. And there is a massive amount of pressure in China, like right now, to not externally, but for a lot of self-interest in China, just for the quality of life in China, to reduce those emissions. Okay.
Right.
You
hear all this stuff about the pollution in China and how bad the air quality is. Completely aside from global climate change, there's all kinds of motivations to improve it locally.
Correct. So they have a substantial motivator in order for them to improve that, and so. It's like when I see that pressure being born there, I see some technology trends that are favorable. I do see a birth rate that is favorable. I think that, I mean, I it's not that I'm what I think is that the, I think that there are certain things as public policy that we can do to affect and to make those changes happen even more quickly by just making it easier for them to happen. I will tell you this. Look, the biggest thing that's driving the reduction of gasoline consumption in the U.S., aside from the high price of gasoline, has been the fact that, listen, you talk about public policy. A public policy that was passed, corporate average fuel economy was the averages that were legislated were increased dramatically a few years ago under the Obama administration. And the reality is that all the automakers, everybody who's an auto pundit, and I like the autos, but the auto pundits are going to be crazy. No, that's impossible. We'll never get there, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Then right now, average fuel economy of cars produced is at an all-time high. And it's been soaring. And you know what? The price of an automobile that you're paying hasn't gone up. So all these drastic scenarios.
And of course, you say it hasn't gone up. But if you actually look at what you're getting for the money, the prices effectively have been going down. The car you get for $20,000 now.
Oh my God!
Is better than the best car you could have bought in the planet 20 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. It has a lot more features, power. I mean, geez, I remember to give you an example, put it in perspective. Mercedes-Benz S-Class. Top of the line, 300 turbo diesel, like from 1980. That car to, I'll give you the current Honda Accord, okay, all right, a Honda Accord. Not even, I mean, in absolute dollar terms, a cheaper car now, forget about inflation adjusted. That car is more powerful, has more features, is more fuel efficient. It's a car so much more comfortable, technologically advanced, comfortable, better driving, everything that you want, that car back then, that's not even funny. I mean, the difference. All at the same time, as the car is like, it's not just incredibly faster, but oh, by the way, like massively more fuel economical at the same time.
And safer.
And safer. All at once. So those trends, but part of it, like I said, over the last 4 or 5 years, the biggest increase has been as gasoline prices have gone up. Corporate average fuel economy, there's been pressure on the auto companies to maintain higher fuel economy. Also, now, even their massive SUVs, like, and all of them have 20-plus mile per gallon ratings, which they've never had before. I mean, it used to be like there were 14 on the highway. Now you get 22 on the highway on those vehicles. It's a jump of over 60% in about 6 or 7 years. And, oh, by the way, without your pocketbook being killed, as everybody used to say, oh, my God, if they do that, we'll never afford a car. It's going to add $2,000 to every car. Bop, bop, bop. Bullshit. Nothing happened. So let's
wrap this up. And we're close to the end of the show, but I want to take a quick break, and we'll come back really quick talking about devices for a few minutes. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we're back. Once I upgraded my computer to Mavericks, I went through all the settings again, and there's a thing that almost every time I upgrade the operating system, I turn on and then turn off a couple months later, which is the thing where on the hour, it reads the time to you.
Oh.
So my computer just said, it's 4 hours. Anyway.
Well, I did do something today that, okay, so Mavericks has this thing where you can now import your contacts also from LinkedIn. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, you used to be able to do that through the LinkedIn app on the iPad or on the iPhone, and then it would sync everywhere anyway, but now, yeah, you can do it directly in Mavericks.
It
was a mistake.
Now my contacts list is so long. Jesus Christ. I'm just like,
I'm sorry, Yvonne. I feel for you.
Oh, crap. That wasn't the brilliant idea. No, not at all.
Yeah. Anyway, so let me get your take on devices. Cause you have, you know, a young child now. You hear all this advice, limit exposure. Part of what they've said is under two, don't let them use these things at all. You've also hear them saying, you know, okay, let them use it, but, you know, make it an hour a day, 2 hours a day, limit it and make sure they're, you know, doing other stuff, blah, 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 because it's not good for them. And, you know, look, and they'll show all kinds of studies that they'll mention studies that about attention spans and how those kids react when they're a year or two later and they're in like a classroom setting or whatever and not reacting properly. And my reaction to all this is fucking bullshit. Get over it. Stop being scared of the technology, because, you know, to me it's like, okay, look, this kind of technology or what evolves from it will be part of my kid's life, you know, forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hurting him to, at age 4, be proficient with an iPad.
Well, here's the only thing. It doesn't. The one thing about everything is that, listen, everything in excess is always a problem.
Of course.
Okay?
Of course.
And for example, that's true if of everything. If that's true of everything, okay? Listen, if I let the kid only play with a thing and I don't have him like play with other things, I don't have him interact, I don't have him socialize, I don't have him that stuff. Yes, absolutely. Of course, going to be a problem. But it's the same thing if you leave the kid only playing sports and he never does anything intellectual, never reads or never touches a book or never does anything else.
Yes, and that's what you get in like these hysterical articles I've read, and you know my mom has shared a couple on Facebook. These hysterical articles you read aren't all about like. Everything in moderation, balance, balance, balance. No, they're like, be careful about these iPads. Be careful about the computers. Don't make sure they don't have a TV in their room. You know, all of this kind of, come on.
Oh, fuck that. I got a TV in his room.
You know, like all of this kind of stuff. And of course,
but now,
you want kids to be well-rounded. You don't want them to do nothing but one thing, but that's an entirely different issue. It's like, you know,
I do a balance. I've had everybody tell me all over the place on this stuff. So I go, like, for example, I mean, I would let him watch some TV for a while. Then I shut it off and then we go play with his toys. Then I go and I take him out. Then I go, maybe I'll show him a little bit. But, you know, I just try to do a variety of things. I just want to make sure.
And see here,
he's not stuck on one thing. That's it.
Here's the thing. I feel like I'm going to encourage his interests. Like, he likes trains, he likes the iPad, he likes train games on the iPad, and if he wants to obsess over that, I'm cool with him obsessing over that. Now, if that was the only thing he ever did and he never touched anything else, maybe I'd get concerned, but if it's a lot of what he does, hey, that's cool. That's his thing. He likes that right now.
Of course he doesn't want to come and build my train.
Yeah, he doesn't want to build your train. But, like, the...
He said he's busy.
He's busy, yeah. But, let him follow his interests, let him do his thing. I mean, and you know, you have one of the things people point out is like, hey, if they're used to all these like flashy educational games on the iPad, by the time they get to first grade, they won't know what to do. They'll be bored and it'll be a horrible experience because they're.
Well, then fucking make school more interesting, you jag offs.
Boom! Exactly. That's not a problem with the freaking iPad. That's a problem with school. Fix school. You know? Yeah, and yes, they expect more. I mean, kids who grow up with these kinds of things are going to, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the fact that he's, you know, he has learned things on the iPad that there are no way I could have taught that to him by hand, reading out loud to him, or his teachers could have got it into him at this point because he's self-motivated, he's learning, he's figuring things out. You know, he's got games where he writes letters, he's got games where he's manipulating objects in 3D, he's counting, he's doing this. He knows how to force quit apps on the stupid thing. You know, he knows how to type several words. He knows his name, he knows zoo, he knows a couple other little things. You know, and some of this we could have gotten for sure, but what does this mean? It means he's coming in with all, you know, as being able to self-direct his own learning according to his interests, and he's going to go into kindergarten with a head start on many topics. Now, perhaps there'll be other topics where he hasn't cared at all and he'll be behind. I don't know, but I don't see this as a problem, and I think this is something that should be encouraged. People shouldn't be afraid of it. And yes, a lot of the studies also that I saw one particular article, and it was a couple months ago, so I don't have the reference or anything, but they pointed out all kinds of tests where they were like pointing out things that, you know, teachers could tell the difference between the kids who used iPads and the kids who didn't, because the kids who used iPads were like this. And in each case, my reaction kept being, okay, you've pointed out a difference. Show me how it's worse. You know, just because it's different doesn't make it bad. just because it's not what you expect and just because it's not the experience that you had or I had when we were children doesn't make it bad. It just makes it different. And they even did brain tests. You know, their brains react differently. Well, of course their brains react differently. They've been exercising them in different ways. Again, how is that bad? You know, and I haven't seen, like, even when it's things like, okay, their, you know, their attention span is shorter. Well, you know, life goes faster now. That can be an advantage in lots of situations if you can multitask and change directions faster. I mean, people were saying the same damn thing about MTV lowering attention spans when we were kids. You know, so what?
I guess they were right.
they were right, but does it make it worse? No. It mean, you know, you can argue to a large degree the fact that, you know, being able to context switch very rapidly between different things is a competitive advantage in a lot of jobs today. You know, and so it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, of course, there are other areas where it's still very valuable to be able to concentrate on something for 8 hours, and maybe that's less common than it used to be, but guess what? The world is different. And my reaction is that this is, you know, my kid and your kid will adapt to the technologies available to them as they grow up. And their lives will not be the same as our lives, but that's not a bad thing. And every time I read these articles, it just reads to me like, you know, every generation in human history has been like, what's happening to the kids? Things are ruining them. And it, to me, this hysteria about, you know, kids being on the portable devices is no different than the hysteria people had about kids watching too much TV, or the hysteria people must have had about kids listening to the radio too much, or I have no doubt whatsoever at some point in the distant past they were worried about, oh, that kid, all he does is spend his time reading. You know, come on. Yeah, anyway, that I just wanted to rant about that, and I get your thoughts. I don't know, I talked over you a bit. Anything else?
No. I'm pretty much in sync with you. I mean, I think that a lot of people have, you know, just really have overblown fears about a whole bunch of this stuff. I mean, I do agree that some people go and wind up leaving their kids only to be cared for by the TV by a computer.
And I think that's an entirely different issue. And I think right. That's when you just say, okay, I don't want to deal with my kid, so I'm going to turn on the TV and not think about him for 8 hours. Right. Or give him the iPad and not think about him for 8 hours. That can
be... that's you not parenting, man. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's an entirely different thing. Now, having said that, I will completely and totally admit to on a number of occasions where I needed to be doing something else, saying, hey, Alex, let's put something on TV. Or here, Alex, iPad.
But I haven't left them there for like... I mean,
it's balance. It's balance. Exactly. And it's also engaging with them. So it's not just, here, watch something on TV and leave me alone. It's while they're watching the thing, you talk to them about what they're watching and you interact with them and what's on TV or what's on the iPad, or you have them tell you about it, or you have them show you what they're doing. And it can be an interactive experience. If you are just putting people in front of putting your kids in front of some technological device, whatever that technological device is, and just ignoring them, okay, there's your problem. The problem is not the technology. The problem is that you're freaking ignoring them. Anyway.
Well, you know what? Balance is everything. I think that's the thing. You know, everybody always freaks out about this stuff. You do it in the right way. You always pay attention. You go and do different things. Kids will be fine. It's not going to be a problem.
There you go. The kids are all right, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening. I think that's a wrap, unless you have anything else, Yvonne.
Nah, let's wrap this puppy up.
As usual, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, with any questions, comments, thoughts. You can contact us both on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at imbou, B-O-U. And as usual, tell your friends, review us on social media, share us, you know, all that lovely stuff that nobody ever does very often. Thanks and goodbye. Have a good week, everybody. And I'm sorry we can't turn the clock back every week. For those of you who don't have very young kids, and Yvonne, I'm sorry you had to do it this time. You know, daylight saving time.
It's too damn dark now. Damn it.
They just need to get rid of it. And of course, my thing, the whole world should just be on UTC and forget about time zones entirely. But, you know, hey, that's not going to happen in my lifetime. And I've learned to live with that. Anyway, right. Goodbye, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.